Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC on the day that Bayern Munich once again were crowned champions of the Bundesliga. A 1-0 victory against Werder Bremen, enough to seal the deal. We're here to discuss it. John Hutchinson, Gab Marcotti and Stevie Nicol. Stevie, I want to start with you as a man who's won, five league titles with Liverpool. What struck me today was how happy Bayern were, as if almost it's the first time they were genuinely celebrating with gusto, which I wasn't quite expecting.
Yeah, I've got to say, I was a little surprised myself, but at the end of the day, listen, when you've been locked up in the house for, 3 months, and you've got a title just dangling in front of you like a carrot, then I guess they've got every reason to be pleased. You know, coming back from the break, the question was, can they pick up where they left off? And the truth is, they absolutely have sailed through since the restart of the Bundesliga. So, yeah, I think if you consider what they've been through over that 3 month period where they really didn't do anything, stuck in the house, and so they have every right to smile. And listen, 8 in a row, not to be sniffed at.
Not to be sniffed at all, Don. Of course, this was in doubt earlier in the season. What a difference the change of manager makes.
It's been incredible. Niko Kovac promised he was going to play attacking football with wingers. It never quite happened. The players never really seemed settled under his regime. He fell out with one or two of the older players. I think Boateng and Thomas Muller come to mind. They look as though they were completely gone at the start of the season. Well, they've been sensational since the restart and since Hansi Flick took over. But they were just too strong again, Bayern. I'm not even sure Florian Kohfeldt felt as though his side could win tonight. They had a good go when Bayern went down to 10 men, but you know, I think the changes that he made were probably leaning towards the Mainz game next week, which is a huge game for them. But Bayern Munich, 8 in a row, 29 in total, they just keep marching on.
Is that a problem, though, Gab, for the German league?
What, that Bayern have won more Bundesliga titles than every other German team combined?
Wow.
That's pretty staggering. I mean, I think what was staggering, what was remarkable this time around is also the adversity Bayern overcame. I mean, as the boys mentioned, obviously they had a change of manager in mid-season for the second time in 3 years. You don't normally win the title when that happens. Their highest paid, their most expensive player was out for most of the season in Lucas Hernandez. Arguably, you know, their best or second best center back in Niklas Süle was out for virtually the whole season. Quarantine Tolisso, who was the most expensive player before Lucas Hernandez came in, was out most of the season. Their goalkeeper was in a contractual dispute for a big chunk of the year. Their highest paid player, Philippe Coutinho, their big star signing, ended up fizzling out and contributing almost nothing. And they had the pandemic, and they win the season by going in this incredible run of wins. And they do it against a very strong Leipzig team who showed it in the Champions League. They showed it they win it against a Borussia Dortmund team that spent very heavily in the summer, and then again in January, of course, adding Erling Haaland. That part, I think, is a remarkable part. The fact that they overcame so much to win it. More broadly, longer term, yeah, it's not an ideal situation when one team is so far ahead.
Gab's saying that pretty much this eclipses Leicester City's achievement a few years ago, Stevie, I think. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Sounds like it. Poor old Bayern. Oh, my goodness. Woe is me. And the fact is that all those players that you've named, Gab, and all the so-called problems, which were, they've still got 11 players that would get in any other team in Germany. So, yes, they've had injuries, but let's be honest. Whilst Bayern Munich have so much more money than anybody else, and the way it's run is to win, it's not to sell players, it's to buy good players, whereas every other team, particularly the team that usually challenges them, or certainly have recently in Dortmund, is all about selling the best players. So, I mean, yes, you've got to congratulate them, 8 in a row, but you know what? They should. They should be winning.
I'm not going to dispute that, Stevie, but equally, it does show that what a strong club it is to be able to steady the ship in those situations. Do they have a massive advantage because they've got the highest wage bill by far and they take the best players to the competition seemingly year on year? Sure, of course. Might it be different if Jurgen Klopp had stuck around and worked his magic and whatever? Maybe. But, you know, the reality is they have the edge, and they've taken advantage of that edge despite facing, I think, a lot of adversity this year that in other years perhaps they haven't faced.
Lewandowski on the score sheet, scoring the winning goal once again. Don, talk, a lot of talk, about him winning the Ballon d'Or.
Well, he's certainly, in my opinion, the best number nine in world football. I think you can add some names to the conversation. I think Immobile comes into that conversation, Harry Kane, even Firmino and Suarez. But for a guy that's been doing it, you know, year in, year out, he's durable. He doesn't pick up too many injuries, big injuries, not long-termers. He still churns out between 25 and 35 goals every single season. He's physically strong. He looks in prime condition. And he looks hungry for goals, and he knows where the goal is. He's not even a selfish number nine. And don't forget as well, he plays up front on his own. He's not
completely ignored
not
by
like Lautaro Martinez or Lukaku playing in the pair.
I know he's good. I know he scores goals. Does he deserve the Ballon d'Or?
Probably not. No, I think there's other contenders and bigger contenders out there. But still, if you just analyse what he's doing every single season, you can guarantee his number of goals, which guarantees titles.
Stevie, Bayern Munich go and win the Champions League in August. Should he get it?
Well, you never threw that one in the mix, did you?
No brainer. He's taking them to the title. He's breaking every record going. If he takes them to the Champions League, then absolutely 100% he deserves it. If indeed he scores the goals that wins him the title.
Well, what if he doesn't score any goals, but they still win the title?
Well, it matters because you're supposed to do it on the field. So if he doesn't do it on the field, then he shouldn't get it, right?
Well, they still win with him on the field. He just happened to didn't score many goals. Maybe he sets them up.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's you and I have a bet and say if Bayern Munich win the Champions League, guess who's going to be scoring the goals?
Is he getting the Ballon d'Or or what? I'm confused. This conversation's gone.
Yes, he's...
No, basically, I'm saying, if he fires Bayern Munich to a Champions League one and he's scoring the goals, which is, if they do win it, it's pretty much guaranteed he's the one that's going to be hitting the back of the net, then yes, correct, he gets it.
Gav?
Is that okay, Dan?
Look, if you're talking about the Ballon d'Or specifically, this is a popularity contest, and it's normally won by people who play really well, who do well throughout the year, but also play really well in games that everybody watches on television, like the Champions League final. So, yes, if Bayern win the Champions League and he plays well in those games, and maybe Barcelona don't win the title and Lionel Messi gets injured or Barca go out early. But what you have to realize, and I think it's hilarious that people get so bent out of shape about it, half the Ballon d'Or voters are essentially Muppets who can only spell Messi or Ronaldo and nothing else. And, you know, the chances of somebody else winning it in a non-World Cup year, the only way it's going to happen, I think, is if they go and they win the Champions League and do something special in the big games, in the semis and the final.
Quickly, Alphonso Davies, Don, right to get sent off today?
No, not for me. I thought it was a little bit harsh. It looked like once he went in to try and read the sort of 1-2, he stumbled back. I thought it was a little bit harsh. If I'm getting sent off and a second yellow, I'd want to be sent off for something proper. I thought the referee panicked slightly. A little word and a little bit more leniency, I would have thought, would be the best way to go. So not my opinion.
Claudio Pizarro coming on at 41, Stevie. Do you have done that?
41 stone. I'm sorry. He was twice as big as anybody else on that field. I'm sorry, I'm not a fan.
Oh, man. Meanwhile, away from Bayern Munich clinching the title, the other big story today was Timo Werner, Gab. Just give us the latest, because Bild were reporting that Leipzig have withdrawn him from the Champions League squad, that he could be going to Chelsea as soon as July, despite the fact, obviously, Leipzig's still in the Champions League and would have a match in August.
Yeah, this is an odd one, and it's not something I necessarily understand. I mean, I presume it's... And let me clear this up off the top. If he moves to Chelsea, he can't actually play for Chelsea until the registration window. reopens in the Champions League, which will be next season, and he can't play for Chelsea in the Premier League either until the season is over, because you have a transfer window and a registration window. I can only assume this has something to do with the clause that's in his contract that has to be actioned by a certain day, and of course Chelsea willing to pay the money, and so somehow they the way it's written, they get control of him earlier a little bit. Like, if you remember, Hakim Ziyech, of course, moving from Ajax to Chelsea, that's a free transfer. He becomes a Chelsea player on July 1st, but they can't actually play him because they can't register him. So I assume it's something like that. It seems like an odd one to me, but equally I could see from Chelsea's perspective how, you know, having spent a lot of money on a firm, you know, if you can avoid him playing in the Champions League and risking injury. But I certainly talk about leaving your club on bad terms if you agree to this.
Gab, is it naive of me? Could he not just come to some sort of arrangement with Chelsea and say, look, okay, I'll sign with you, I'm a Chelsea player, but come on, I've gone on this whole run with Leipzig, I'd like to see it out.
I don't think it's naive of you at all. And I think he may yet come to that arrangement. I think he's gained a little bit of leverage, perhaps, over Werner. I found the story a little bit confusing and not entirely clear cut. I think there might be things that we don't know. I certainly hope he does, because, you know, when you sign a contract, clearly the meaning of that contract is the end of the season. But then again, you know, I flagged this up a long time ago. This whole June 30th thing is a big issue with players' contracts ending, with clauses kicking in, with loan periods ending. And I think it's something that clubs need to address in double-quick time.
This is a head-scratcher, isn't it, Stevie?
Yeah, it is a little. I mean, you know, Gab's pretty much laid out from Leipzig and Timo Werner's point of view, but 100% from Chelsea's point of view. Why do you don't want this guy playing? I'll be shocked if he doesn't go to Chelsea as soon as they possibly can get him there. I mean, it would be a lovely story. Oh, I can finish the season out with Leipzig and then go to Chelsea. But listen, at the end of the day, it's a business, and it's not good business for Chelsea.
Yeah, but from your perspective, Steve, if you're Timo Werner, you'd want to see it out, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Yeah, but they've just spent whatever million on him. If I'm Chelsea, I don't want him to see it out.
No, but what if you're Timo Werner?
I mean, it's pretty... Sorry?
What if you're Timo Werner?
Well, if you're Timo Werner, you want to be a nice guy. It never crosses your mind that you're going to get injured ever. But the fact is, it happens. And so, from Chelsea's point of view, it's, you know what? We've just spent a lot of money on you to play for us, not to play for them and get injured. So, it's a business decision. It's not a gentleman's decision, shall we say. If I'm Abramovich, I'm like, he's our player, he's not playing for them. If he gets injured, then we're done.
Don?
If I'm Timo Werner, I would insist that I wouldn't go to Chelsea, and I would insist that I want to try and win the Champions League with Leipzig. Surely, because they haven't signed, he hasn't signed for Chelsea yet, so surely he can still be registered for the latter stages of the Champions League. He can say to Leipzig, okay, I am going to go, but only when we have exited the competition. While we're in it, I want to be a Champions League winner.
Go on, Gab.
There's another element to this, which is the fact that the German season, you know, will finish by the end of June. The Champions League, if it resumes, and we'll know a lot more in the next 24 hours, UEFA's executive committee meeting on Wednesday, isn't going to restart until August 12th. So you're talking about 6 weeks during which he would hang around at Leipzig, waiting for possibly one quarterfinal, and that's a time when, remember, the new season in the Premier League is going to start in September. So I think Chelsea would make the point that, well, we want you to be ready. Chelsea, of course, out of the Champions League, virtually out. So they want to be in a position where they say, well, we want you ready for training camp so you can hit the ground running when the new Premier League season starts up in September. I think that's going to be the most difficult part to deal with, is the fact also that the Bundesliga ends there and he's going to have 6 weeks without football and then be asked to go and play a quarterfinal. I think that also plays into this.
It also tells you as well how much Nagelsmann and Leipzig really value Timo Werner. Because if they're quite happy with him not being in the squad and allow him to go to Chelsea while they're in the Champions League, it says to me that Nagelsmann's got better players, or he thinks he's got better players that can cope. If they need him, they need to try and keep him on if they're serious about winning the Champions League.
Well, another man who showed Timo Werner absolutely no respect was Gab Marcotti in the final of the Battle of the Leagues. It was him against Jules, the Bundesliga against Ligue 1. Gab dropping Timo Werner to the bench for his detriment as well. Jules going on to win it all. You can relive it all over on the website. And by the way, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast is available now. Be sure to check it out.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Barcelona once again then 5 points clear at the top of the table after 2-0 victory against Leganés at the Camp Nou. Ansu Fati and Lionel Messi with the goals in the game. Sid Lowe, Frank Leboeuf and Ali Moreno with me. Ali, let's talk about the game overall. What did you make of it?
Well, you look at 2-0 for Barcelona and you may think, well, this was what you expected. It was comfortable. It was the sort of matchup that you would see Barcelona playing at home against a team like Leganés, who really doesn't pose a threat going forward. Well, the truth of the matter is that if you watch the game, you would have known that 15 minutes in, Leganés should have, and really, they should have been up 2-0. And when I say should have, I mean these are 100% chances that Leganés missed. One of them then led clears off the line. So what it tells you is that Barcelona is going to give away chances to anybody. Leganés has only scored 22 goals this season after 29 matches played, and yet they created clear opportunities against Barcelona early on in the game. From that, Barcelona had a difficult time creating chances, a lot of horizontal possession, side-to-side passing, not a whole lot of movement in the final third. They're able to break through by a goal by Ansu Fati, who I really think was the best player on the field for Barcelona in the first half, and really willing to take players on and trying to make a difference and break people down in 1v1 situations. Lionel Messi playing more of a playmaking role, kind of vertical passing, finding passes through line and breaking down defensive lines, doing that. But after that, offensively, Antoine Griezmann, more of the same. And when you look at Ansu Fati and what he did in 1v1 situations, and you look what Antoine Griezmann doesn't really impact the game, doesn't really change the game, you just have to start wondering, when is it really going to happen for Antoine Griezmann? Everybody else seems to have a role in this team. Antoine Griezmann, not so just yet.
Let's go through some of those points. Let's start off with Ansu Fati, shall we, Sid? Very impressive today.
Yeah, and part of it, of course, is because he does something different to other players. As Ali says, you know, this was a Barcelona side that was faced by, defensively, a very deep team, a team that played with three centre-backs and two wing-backs who were very deep alongside them. And it was hard for Barcelona to find a way through it. And while it's true that Ansu Fati lost the ball quite often, while it's true that he's not always that precise with his passing, he does something that others don't do. He runs at people. He commits defenders. He opens space up for others. And with Junior running alongside him, he was probably the player most likely to make something happen in that first half. And I think that's really important for Barcelona. Not just the quality that he has, but the fact that he's slightly different in profile to the players around him.
Best player on the pitch today, Frank?
Oh, definitely. And you can ask and you wonder why Kikisic didn't put him out. Maybe because it's easier, because the guy will not complain, because he's very young. And comparing to all-stars, you can see on the field, who I'm sure will have show that disagreement toward the coach. But Ansu Fati is able to change the pace of the game, change the rhythm, like Messi is capable of. And clearly today he was the best player that I saw. But the slowness of the game from Barcelona, the transparency of some player made me enjoy seeing Ansu Fati changing the pace again and doing great on his side.
second half. Penalty for Barca. Penalty for you, Ali?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the angles are kind of difficult to look at and trying to see where the contact's coming from. But I think the defender who's trailing the play from behind Lionel Messi bumps into Messi, and Messi was already losing his balance from dragging defenders around at the beginning of that play. I think it's a penalty. It's a close one. It's a tight one. But really, it's not what changed the game. What changed the game here was Leganés not taking advantage of the early opportunities. And then from then on, Barcelona at some point was going to break through. As frustrated as they were in the first half, eventually they found a way through, and they did just enough. Don't quite understand why Quique Setién kept Messi out there for 90 minutes, given the amount of games that they have coming up. But I imagine that if you're Messi, you just tell Setién when to play and when not to play. And if you give the option to Lionel Messi, he's going to stay on the field.
How would you sum up Griezmann today, Frank?
Well, invisible, I would say, except that he scored a goal. But I think it was Semedo was an inch offside. But except that, and that goal was dismissed. We didn't see him. It's like wandering on the field, maybe wondering where he has to go to please the king, to get some good football and maybe more being more efficient. But we don't see him. I don't see him like I saw him when he was playing for Atletico Madrid, when I saw him, when I see him every time he played with the national team when he's a leader. He's not at all the Antoine Griezmann that I know.
Sid, this is becoming a real problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and as Frank says, but more than anything else, there was a sense that he wasn't out there today. I mean, he scored that one goal that was ruled out. There's one very good interception he makes deep in his own penalty area late in the second half, and that's basically it. And obviously one of the things you'll always get with Griezmann is that work rate. He will come back, he will help out, he will, you know, continue to make the runs, which he did all the way through the first half, but none of those runs ever really felt like they were the kind of runs that meant he would get the ball or that he would have a decisive impact on the game. Now, I think his stats this year show that he's been pretty important, particularly in terms of scoring the first goal, but for a player who came at the price that he came at, for a player who was as good as we thought he was at Atletico Madrid, it hasn't been a great season. And I think fundamentally, for the reason that Frank's outlined there, it's not just that Griezmann isn't playing well, it's that it doesn't feel like he has a place in this team. It doesn't look like he's found that part of the pitch and that role around his teammates that suits him. And for example, we've seen in, what is it now, I think four games that Martin Braithwaite's played, that Braithwaite seems to fit better than Griezmann. Now, of course, he's not as good a player, but he seems to have understood or embraced that role better than Griezmann's been able to do.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you for whispering, Sid, throughout, trying not to wake his family. Of course, it's very, very late in Spain. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow, and we'll be reflecting on the return of the Premier League. Tomorrow, then, the Coppa Italia final. Napoli taking on Juventus live on ESPN. Coverage starting at 2:50 Eastern. No surprise when you take a look at how the bookies have this game set. Juventus coming into this tie 7-4 on favourites. Napoli 5-4 outsiders. Well, let's keep with Gab Marcotti, shall we, to look ahead to this game in some more detail. Gab, what in particular should we be looking forward to?
Well, I think one of the big things for Juventus is they did not play particularly well in their semifinal against Milan. So Sarri's going to have to rejigger things. Interesting to see what he does with the midfield, where apart from Bentancur, certainly Miro and Pjanic struggled. But also, I think, up front, where he used Cristiano Ronaldo as a traditional center forward rather than his usual position, cutting in from the wings. That didn't work out, that three-man attack with him, Dybala, and Douglas Costa. He's going to have to come up with something else. I don't think Gonzalo Higuain is ready to start. So I would imagine he'll move Ronaldo back to his original position, but the key is going to be making the right moves around that to get Juve productive against a Napoli side that show that they can defend and counterattack well.
What do the Juve fans want from that front three? How would they like it set up, Gab?
Well, I think they just want Ronaldo to play well. And while Ronaldo is, you know, he'll get his goals. When Ronaldo starts from a wide position and comes inside, He spared a lot of the grunt work of having to line up against two central defenders, which is physically taxing. He doesn't have to go and try to open up space for the runs of the midfielders. He's much more free to kind of do what he does best at this stage of his career, which is to pop up at the far post for a header or to come and cut inside and shoot on goal. So I think that's something that he's going to have to revisit. We know why he tried that system. He thought that it would give Dybala more space and obviously set up Douglas Costa for the one-on-one. But it basically robs you of, I think, a lot of Ronaldo's effectiveness when you put him in that position.
Meanwhile, Napoli, of course, very much a turbulent season off the pitch. How much could a victory tomorrow galvanize them going forward?
I think it'd be pretty huge. I mean, everybody was really down on it when Ancelotti was let go back in December. There was a sense that Aurelio De Laurentiis was ready to really to blow up the team by bringing in Rino Gattuso. They had all sorts of guys who were who looked as if they'd be leaving, Callejon and Mertens. Now Mertens, not only is he the team's top scorer, but he's agreed terms, although I'm not sure he's actually signed yet a new contract. There's talk of Koulibaly possibly sticking around for another season, and Napoli really having a go at it. And if you look at the table and where they were, Gattuso has marched them right back up to the table. You know, they're in sixth place right now. I think a Champions League spot is still really a long shot. But he's galvanized them. Some might say the team's a little bit one-dimensional. But, you know, he's done things his way. They're much more intense defensively, and they're really built to counter, and they do it very, very effectively. So they love nothing better than to get one over on Juve, the old enemy, as it were.
Prediction then, Mr. Marcotti?
You know, it's funny. On paper, Juventus are a much better team. Napoli, I thought, were fortunate in some ways against Inter to get through. If Juve play the way they played against Milan, I think it's going to be close. I think Napoli can take it. If Sarri sorts things out in the middle of the park, finds Ronaldo's position, then it's much closer. I just wonder, it's this early since there's a comeback, I wonder if maybe Napoli can't somehow steal it.
Thank you very much. Just a reminder, of course, Serie A then returns domestically at the weekend and once again exclusively on ESPN+. We've got four games for you on Saturday. Torino against Parma, that's Verona against Cagliari. Then on Sunday, Atalanta play host to Sassuolo and it's Inter against Sampdoria. The Premier League then back on Wednesday, and what a game. Manchester City taking on Arsenal. Manchester City, big favourites going into this clash. Stephen Don back with me to look ahead to this game. Don, it's difficult, isn't it, to kind of make any sort of presumptions or analysis going into this because we don't really know the state of these two teams, but City should be in good stead, shouldn't they?
I think so, Dan. I think we've got to try and remember that we can't take any form into our conversation because of the pandemic. But at the same time, when you try and analyse what's going to be happening with no fans in the stadium and you just turn it into an 11v11, I cannot give Arsenal a prayer on taking anything from this game. I think City win it comfortably. It might not be by a massive scoreline. It might not be 4 or 5, but I think it'll be comfortable. I see them controlling the game. I don't see how Arsenal can hurt them. And City will take any sort of sting out of the game that Arsenal try and offer, and I can see a scoreline of 2 or 3 and very easy for them.
Do you agree, Stevie?
I do, 100%. When players and teams are in the kind of physical shape they'll be in, not quite 100%, then it's all about keeping the ball. And there's not a team better, pretty much on the planet, than keeping the ball than Manchester City. And that is going to kill the legs of Arsenal. I mean, they're going to struggle defensively in the middle of the park anyway. Xhaka looks as though, it sounds as though he's going to play, but he's not 100%. Ceballos, Ozil. I mean, how are they going to get the ball back? So, yeah, I'm absolutely with Don here. I can't come up with an argument why Arsenal are going to take a point, never mind beat Manchester City.
This, though, from a man who doesn't know the difference between his left or right. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, be sure to check out Extra Time, available on your YouTube channel.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
We'll end today's show with that great story in England. I'm sure you've seen it. Marcus Rashford, very much the hero of the hour. Initially, the UK government, with schools closed in the summer, said basically those who normally claim free lunches, who need that food, they wouldn't get it. Marcus Rashford, who, when he was growing up, needed that support, led this very public campaign to persuade the government to, in fact, invest in these children and give them free lunches. And today they confirmed that they will. Amazing stuff from the England international. A great way to end the show. Thank you very much for everyone who joined us today. Stay tuned, though. Extra time with Don and Steve. Welcome in, then, to the latest edition of Extra Time. Don and Stevie with me. First question is from Jan. Jan wants to know, what was Howard Kendall wearing in the bus on our away trips?
What was Jan Fjortoff? What was he wearing? I'll tell you exactly what he was wearing. Nothing apart from his underpants.
What? Why?
Yes, Howard used to sit at the bottom of the coach, completely naked, top end, nothing apart from his underpants at the bottom. And when we won, a massive cigar at the front of the coach, just with his beaming smile.
Oh, my goodness.
It was amazing.
Well, why didn't he put some clothes on?
No, he didn't need to. He just sat there with his underpants and his big cigar at the front of the coach after 3 points.
Didn't need to.
I would disagree. Stevie, what was the best memory of the game when you were growing up?
Take your time.
Best memory? It's not an easy one because my whole life was football.
Right.
The only thing in my head was football. I mean, the one thing I do remember is every Sunday I used to have an argument with my mum because I had to go to Sunday school, and I always missed half of the football from the English league on a Sunday afternoon with Brian Moore. So every Sunday morning was an argument about why I had to go. So growing up, that's about all, because every other thing was just football.
What's the trophy to your left, Stevie? I feel that's new. I haven't seen that before.
That?
What? What are you doing?
Right there.
I can't see what you're doing.
I'm putting my thumb on it.
What?
Oh, sorry.
Your trophy.
Well, it's actually, if it's just... Yes. Well, if you can't see me, how can you see the trophy?
Because I don't know what you're doing with the hand. The caption's in front of you. Just tell me what the trophy is behind you. The left one that looks like a little girl.
It is the Sports Writers Footballer of the Year trophy, Dan.
The one on the left.
1989.
The one on the left.
No, on the left.
On the
man.
Left.
On your
left. Left, Stevie. No, that's your right.
Way. That's your right.
What are you doing? No, what?
Yes.
There's nothing there.
What do you mean there's nothing there?
Little girl.
Trophy of a girl there.
The little statue.
No!
Other way!
I've got no idea what you're talking about.
That, yes, that one there.
You might talk about.
Yes!
Yes!
All right. Well, I can't see them on the camera, can I?
But you know what's behind you.
That's... The pipe. How do I know it's behind me? I don't have eyes in the back of my head.
It's your house.
Oh yeah, oh, I remember every single thing that's in it, don't I? Aye, right.
Yeah.
So these two are the best Anglo-Scottish player playing in the English league, and the middle one.
Are
We can't see that one, though.
It's the...
We'll move it closer.
The League Cup Winners Trophy.
Oh, OK.
Bring it in. Bring it in.
Bring it in, Steve, so we can see it.
Not that one.
Not that one.
Not that one. Dan, what's... Dan, has he not just that, turned 100?
I want that one.
OK. I'm glad I asked. That went well.
That one.
Yeah!
There you go.
The League Cup Winners.
Nice.
That's what we got for winning the League Cup.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Ah, that was smooth. What was your best?
Well, when I'm looking at the camera, I can't see it.
But you know the difference between left and right.
Sorry. But if you're looking at me, that's my left.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you said what? Hold on. You said, what's the trophy, right? Now, what I'm looking at, I can only see one trophy.
Right.
So, clearly, I think you made a mess of it, and I've pointed to that there.
But Dan said on your left.
Clever clogs.
Don, we've got to move on. We've got to have the whole extra time. And
Dan can be a bit stupid.
What was your best
Dan
memory of the game
left
while growing up,
Don? Don't worry about it.
My memory is like Stevie was playing when you were young, but actually watching telly. It had to be World Cup 82 and 86. They were the best World Cups. When you've seen the Brazilian sides of Zico and Adair, Falcao, Socrates, all the legendary Italian players. So actually, as a youngster, getting into your teens when you the World Cup is actually on the telly and you've never seen these guys play football before, man, it was just magic.
How is Stevie going to celebrate Liverpool's title win? At home with a shepherd's pie and a beer or two, I assume?
You know something, it's going to be really strange. I mean, under normal circumstances, absolutely, I would have celebrated and gone mental and jumped up and down. It's going to be such an anti-climax that I'm really not quite sure, because in my mind, although if you look at the points table, they haven't won it yet, but in my mind, they've already won it. And it seems like in everybody else's mind, they've won it. So it almost seems as though it's done and dusted, it's over, and it's time to move on. So it's going to be a little strange, definitely.
Don, better pass to the ball, Scholes or Gerrard?
Oh, I mean, I'm a Stevie G fan, and I always get asked the question, which one of the three, including Frank Lampard, Scholes and Stevie G, were the best, having played against all three. And all three were geniuses, but I'd put Stevie G at another level. I really would. I think he's all-round game. His passing abilities, whether it was short, whether it was long. But I get if people want to mention Scholes, I totally get it.
Don, how much do you think Stevie would be worth on today's transfer market? Good question.
Stevie Nicol?
Yeah, well, yes.
Well, it could have been Stevie G. I don't know. Trying to think who... I mean, if you're worth a fortune... I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say around 50.
Yeah.
50 million quid.
I think so. Don, what was your record transfer fee, all those clubs that you went to?
5.5 to West Ham.
Someone paid 5.5 million for you?
Exactly. Yeah.
What do you reckon now, Stevie? What's he worth now?
Hutch. Well, he scores goals for Wendell Park, so absolutely, you've got to be up there. I mean, that's... There's not that many people can do it in the Premier League, so... Yeah, you've got to be up in the 50s, 60s, right? Absolutely. Score goals from the middle of the park.
100%. 60s.
Wow.
50-60 for someone that doesn't play 100 games for your club.
Has someone got their TV on? I can hear something in the background. Is that you, Stevie?
Is it on my left or my right?
Which training exercise was fun to do and which was the worst?
Well, the worst was the bleep test.
Bleep test?
Fun, shooting, crossing and shooting, finishing.
Yeah.
All the things that you like to do. Bleep test was the worst.
Stevie?
I've got to say, the bleep test at the end of it was tough, but it wasn't the worst. The worst one was we used to do an exercise in pre-season, and Don will remember this, where Ronnie Moran had you, he had like a circuit with cones all round a pitch, a full field, and there was probably about 8 cones round it, and he decided how many cones you ran at a certain pace. And the worst thing about it was you didn't really know how long it was going to go, and you had to stop and start all the time. So he would shout three cones, and you had to get three cones in a certain and a decent pace, and then you would stop. And then you'd shout four cones, and then you'd do four cones, and you had no idea how long this was going to last. And it was always awful stopping and starting and stopping and starting. That was the worst one for me. I don't say I liked the bleep test, but the bleep test was good because you could concentrate and get after it. This run we used to do was brain damage.
When you coached, did you do that run? Did you make your players do it?
Absolutely not.
After seeing Marcus Rashford have an amazing season prior to his injury, if he carries that form on for the years to come, can either of you see him as a future Ballon d'Or winner? Don?
Wow, the Ballon d'Or's the theme. Listen, what he's done, I tweeted today, deserves an MBE and Sports Writers Personality of the Year. He's been remarkable. Him and Raheem Sterling have led the way. And what he's done, not only in lockdown, but what he's been doing for months and for quite a bit, is raising an awful lot of money and awareness. But the Ballon d'Or, as Gab was saying, it's another level. You'd probably, if you're looking at centre forwards, that's probably going to win it a lot. You'd probably think Mbappe.
Stevie, we know the answer to this, but we'll ask it anyway. Will England ever win a World Cup? This is probably their greatest generation and rivals their late 90s team, but they still missing something.
Oh, another great generation of England teams. Yeah, brilliant. Aye, another one. How many are you going to have? I hope you never win it again, because we're still hearing about it from 1966. So if you win it again, it's going to be twice as bad.
Don, do you hate us? No, do you hate you us, won't. The English, as much as Stevie does?
No, not as much as Stevie. I'm a little bit more neutral, having been born in England. I am a Scot, but they ain't going to win the World Cup. There's too many better sides.
Final question, and it's a doozy, Stevie. Get ready. Which former teammate of yours had the finest moustache? Graham Souness, Ian Rush, John Aldridge, or Don Hutchinson?
Oh, that's easy. It's got to be Souness.
Oh, really?
I mean, my goodness. Oh, absolutely. You talk about coiffured and looked after. I mean, he would spend all day in front of the mirror making sure that they were all the right length. And then if one was out of place, he would get his scissors, his wee snippers, and just cut it off. The rest of them did it for a laugh, I think. Including Don.
Yeah, mine was a lockdown laugh, but no one will top Sui's moustache.
Did you ever try, Stevie?
No. What? A moustache?
No. Yeah. No?
No chance. No. No, I look stupid enough with having a moustache.
Well, that is very true. That's quite an apt way to end Extra Time. Thank you very much then to Don, to Stevie, to the trophies in the background, to left and right, and to all those shenanigans. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.